Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell. Joining me today, the Athletic's Sheil Kapadia is here to talk about last night's bizarre Bills-Patriots game and whether Bill Belichick is a genius for running the ball 175 times. Also, we're going to get into the Eagles situation with Gardner Minshew and Jalen Hurts and who should be playing quarterback for them as they try to make it back to the postseason. Also, get into which teams are best positioned to improve their roster over the next couple of years with the draft capital and free agent money they have to work with around the NFL. But before we get into all of that, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. You may have heard of it. It is called The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. I don't know if you've heard of Mina Kimes before. A regular contributor to this show, a friend, a colleague, and an excellent analyst, and just an actual legitimate funny person as opposed to a fake internet funny person. Mina's podcast, as you probably already know, features news, trends, analysis in and around the NFL with all kinds of guests, including Dominique Foxworth, Field Yates, Mike Golic Jr., occasionally Bill Barnwell himself. If you like X's and O's, if you like analytics, or if you like too much dog talk, yes, of course, Lenny is a dog, give the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny a listen wherever you get your podcast. Now, here's Sheil Kapadia talking about the bizarre Bills-Patriots game from Monday night. All right, joining me now, here as promised, on the Bill Barnwell Show, a frequent contributor, a friend, a former colleague, I would say, is it inveterate better? Veterate better? What is the term for someone who's good at betting? At least over the past couple of years, based on how you've performed in your column.
I don't know, but yeah, I'm having a little bit of a rough go. So like, depending on what week we talk, you could name me, you could label me as that or not label me as that, but it's good to talk to you. I don't know if it took Gardner Minshew, for me to make my first appearance of the 2021 season, but if that's the case, then so be it.
Well, joining me, talking about Gardner Minshew first, to talk about last night's Bills-Patriots game is my friend Sheil Kapadia. Sheil, let's talk about this Bills-Patriots game because I feel like the internet has gone insane based on what we saw yesterday. I'm seeing everything from Bill Belichick's offensive game plan belongs in the Hall of Fame to this proves that Mac Jones is a total fraud and that Bill Belichick, if Bill Belichick had his house on fire, he wouldn't count on Mac Jones to call the fire department. Like it's just a total weird situation out there. So let's just start with what happened last night and what we think it means. Do you think we can draw big conclusions about the AFC East and the Bills and the Patriots from last night's game? Or is it just a weird one-off because of the wind in Western New York last night?
Well, it was a lot of fun. I'll start with that. Yes. I mean, it's rare to get a game that's like, so different from every other game you watch that week or even that season. So as it was playing out and you're seeing what the Patriots strategy is going to be, I mean, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I loved every single minute of it. And so I guess we can start with, like you mentioned, Belichick strategy. And I think it, you don't have to be that smart to come up with what his strategy was. I think he thought, all right, let's be conservative. Let's run the ball. Let's keep this game close. Let's see if the Bills can make some mistakes and we'll go about it that way. And then all of a sudden you break a 68-yard touchdown and you go up in that game. So you say, okay, let's stick with it. If the Bills had converted some of their opportunities, is Mac Jones going to only throw three times in that game? No. I mean, I think obviously Ben Belichick probably has to adjust there. And so I guess my big picture takeaway is that it was a fun strategy. It was a creative game plan. I don't know that if you play it out, 10 times with Bill Belichick taking that exact strategy, that the Patriots are going to win all of those. I think it's probably more like a 50-50 split. I think you can even make the case that maybe the Bills win more often than the Patriots in that scenario. I know Patriots fans probably don't want to hear that. So that's the first part of it. And then in terms of grand conclusions for the AFC East, I mean, I think the big thing is it was very meaningful just because of what it does in terms of the probabilities going forward and the leg up it gives the Patriots in terms of being in kind of the driver's seat for the top seed in the AFC. Does it make me think that the Bills can't beat the Patriots and that the Patriots are a far superior team? No, not at all. So in terms of that, you know, we're probably going to see a very different game in 2 or 3 weeks when they face again.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you in your thoughtful way, which is not appropriate for the internet, you know, brought up a very nuanced argument, or at least a more nuanced argument than what I've seen, which is in your column today at The Athletic, you said, Bill Belichick, you know, two things can be true. Number one, Bill Belichick came up with a creative game plan that helped the Patriots win. And two, Belichick's strategy worked because the Bills missed a lot of opportunities. And I think that's the distinction that needs to be made here, right? Like, yes, Bill Belichick going incredibly run heavy, more than I think, you know, even most teams would do in a typical situation where there's a lot of wind, made sense. And it played to what the Patriots do well. And the Patriots executed that plan reasonably well. They were not incredible. They scored one touchdown all game on a 68-yard score. But overall, they did a reasonable job given the conditions, given their strengths on offense.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think the strategy was fine, you know, but if you look at it, yeah, they ran for 222 yards. They had the one huge run and that counts. Don't get me wrong.
Of course.
You know, when you run the ball that many times, you're hoping that you can break one. And they did do that. But if you look at it, the other 45 times they ran the ball, they averaged 3.4 yards per carry. You know, if you want to get into like the advanced stat, just in terms of success rate with EPA, I mean, it was 28.9%. What does that number mean? It means it would have ranked 22nd out of 28 teams in terms of rushing efficiency on a down to down basis in week 13. So like, I don't think that the Bills, you know, really got gashed. I'm not crushing the Bills for the way they played that game defensively. To me, it had a lot more to do with the other side of the ball. I think you can absolutely criticize the Bills for what they did offensively. You know, it was kind of like two teams took a pretty conservative approach. Obviously, the Patriots were way more conservative. And I don't know that the Bills had to be necessarily that conservative. Like I was looking, you know, when you looked at Josh Allen's throws, I was kind of going, wow, he's able to kind of, with that cannon of an arm, able to cut through the wind, and maybe they should be a little bit more aggressive. You know, I can't understand why they didn't use him more as a runner. We know that's in the playbook. We saw that in that Chiefs game earlier this season where Josh Allen, you know, the fumbles have been an issue in the past, but if you look at the numbers on designed runs or option runs, you know, basically anything that's not a scramble, like he is a very, very good runner, and the running backs are not very good. I mean, what did they run 19 or 20 times with their running backs for, I can't remember what the number was, 3 yards per carry or something like that. And so they were almost wasting downs there. And so even with that approach, I mean, they had missed opportunities. They had the fumbled handoff to Matt Breida. They had two Dawson Knox drops on third down. They had a 33-yard field goal that went wide right. They had the opportunity to Stephon Diggs down the left sideline in the end zone that he at least had a chance on. They had the back shoulder throw to Diggs on the right side that Allen missed there. Now, Belichick's entire strategy was based on, you know, allowing the Bills to make mistakes and, you know, kind of letting them sink themselves. And I guess they did. They certainly did do that. But, you know, my thing is, like, if they had all those opportunities, again, if you play that game 10 times and they have all those opportunities, maybe they probably convert on at least a few more than they converted on last night. And then we're having a different conversation. So really, you know, I know I'm like babbling here, but it comes down to something that you were the first person I remember writing about this. And now it's just kind of common, is that in these games that are decided by 3 points or one score games, there is a randomness element. There is a luck element to it. And so we can say that, yeah, his strategy was sound. They won the game. They get credit. But at the same time, like, you know, some of the bounces you could say certainly went their way. And I don't know that we necessarily need to put that. There's a lot of Bill Belichick game plans you can put in the Hall of Fame. To me, that isn't necessarily one where I say, wow, the Bills got completely outcoached and the game plan is what won it for the Patriots. Maybe, you know, others can, reasonable people can disagree on that, but that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, I think that's the tough part for me, is that, like, if you want to say Bill Belichick figured, hey, this is going to be a close game, I'm going to just try and make as few mistakes as possible and hope that the Bills make mistakes. Sure. I think that's reasonable enough. That's not an unreasonable strategy. Like, I think that's plausible. But the Patriots fumbled more times in this game than the Bills did. And, of course, the Bills recovered one. They recovered the play where N'Keal Harry headbutted the football. Speaking of, by the way, as a quick aside, can we talk about how, like, we're talking about Belichick as a genius, and the guy he had returning punts in this game was a guy who hasn't returned punts since college?
And McDermott, I saw, took a little jab at him, right, saying he had his returners be inactive. By the way, I loved the post game, you know, McDermott just being salty about it. You know, I know people were upset with that. Let's get it going. You know, they're not supposed to like each other. They're in the same division. They're probably going to be battling for years to come. I'm sure. I know there are a lot of head coaches in the NFL that are probably like, oh, give me a break. You know, the guy had Tom Brady for 20 years, and there are others who probably are, you know, take a different tone. But I like the little rivalry. I like the little saltiness that we saw after that game.
I agree. And I think, like, the part that I struggle with is the idea that the Patriots, the game plan was so successful that it forced the Bills to make mistakes. Well, what mistakes happened in this game? Like you said, I mean, the Bills fumble a handoff, which, I mean, the Patriots, it wasn't like there was pressure on the handoff that caused the fumble. He just dropped the handoff. It was just sloppy. The field goal, wasn't like the field goal was blocked. Wasn't like they were put in a terrible situation. They had a 33-yard field goal and missed it. And because they missed that field goal, they had to go for a touchdown instead of another field goal on that final drive there. So, you know, like, if the Patriots had forced four Josh Allen interceptions, the Bills had fumbled four times, I think you could sit here and say, hey, great game plan. They were super aggressive with the football. They knew what they were doing, and that caused the Bills to lose. But it sort of felt more like a game where the Bills beat themselves as opposed to the Patriots really having a ton of say. And they played well on defense, but I think the place, the side of this game were more just, a little bit of bad luck as opposed to the Patriots sort of causing the Bills to make those mistakes.
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, I think the Patriots defense did play well, and I don't think the Bills made it hard enough on them. You know, that's how I kind of look at it on that side of the ball. That's where I look at it. And if you're a Bills fan who's saying, what are you talking about? You know, I want to crush McDermott today. I think that's where you can look at it and say, you know, they didn't have to play the same game that the Patriots were playing, you know, offensively. They have a different quarterback. They're built differently. They're not built to run the ball. They're not going to line up in 12 and 13 personnel or 22 personnel with a fullback and just run the ball. And so that's where I would really kind of have regret if I were the Bills. I would say, you know what, I think we kind of got caught playing the same game that the Patriots were playing, and we didn't need to do that. We paid our quarterback a lot of money. That's not necessarily to say they had to, you know, continually throw the ball down the down the field 50 yards. But even just, you know, that game against the Saints that the Bills play, again, I know that was indoors and the conditions were different, but that was like, hey, we have to methodically move the ball down the field, and they were capable of doing that. And it didn't take much. I'm not telling the Bills could have scored 30 points in those conditions. It took, like, you know, they needed one touchdown in that game to probably win that game, or at least to change the complexion of that game, where all of a sudden the Patriots say, all right, we're gonna have to throw it a little bit and take some chances, and then who knows what happens there. So it's fun. Yeah, the extremes have been kind of nuts. I'm with you with this game, with the way it's being talked about, because it was so different. But I guess that's, you know, that's better than just a boring game.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. But don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
So a couple of things here with the Bills as we finish up talking about this game. First, in terms of their construction, in terms of their style of play, I mean, this is a team that went to several Super Bowls in the early 90s running a K-gun offense, throwing the ball for that era, if I remember correctly, quite a bit, especially I'm imagining when they were in, or, you know, the first half of games relative to the rest of the league. Last year, of course, I think the most pass-happy team in football, after you adjust for game situation, and very successful doing it. I mean, Josh Allen was awesome, an MVP candidate, Stephon Diggs looked great. Nobody was questioning the Bills throwing the football last year. We get to this year, we have seen them struggle a bit. I think they're in the middle of the pack by DVOA after last night's game against a very good Patriots defense, of course. But we're seeing people criticize the Bills for building this team that can't, you know, play to the weather that they're likely to face in November, December, and January in Buffalo, which is a lot of wind, possibly some snow, subpar conditions. Basically, the Bills are getting criticized for not having a good enough offensive line and not being able to run the ball effectively. Do you think that criticism is valid?
No, I don't have an issue with the way they built the team. Actually, I think it's one of like the best jobs anyone's done of building a team, like doing a rebuild probably in the last 10 or 20 years, what they did there. I think Brandon Bean is one of the best GMs in the NFL, and they built it the right way. Now, could they? Yeah. You know, it's not like they've ignored the run game. You know, they spent a pick on Singletary, and they spent a pick on Zach Moss, and they brought back some of their offensive linemen. Like, are there always tweaks they could make and improvements they could make? Absolutely. You know, I think one of the wrinkles they've had, which is what I mentioned earlier, was making Josh Allen a part of that run game, which is why that part is just, you know, I don't know if they've talked about that yet this week or they'll talk about it later, but that part is really confusing to me because that, you know, this was a game where, like, I understand not wanting to do that every week, given how much money he's making, but like, this was the type of game, all right, high leverage situation, playoff seeding on the line, maybe our playoff lives on the line, an ugly game. We can't get anything going. It's really windy. Like, that's the time to break out that part of the playbook. And that was just really baffling to me that they did not do that, because I think that's something that can really provide answers for them, is when he is a part of that run game and you can make it more difficult on opposing defenses. And all of a sudden they have to think about how they want to play. So I think they could use some tweaks. I think they could certainly use, you know, whether it's offensive line upgrades or just their current offensive line playing a little bit better. Yes, you know, I think that the turnovers have been an issue for them this year. They've had so many high leverage turnovers. I think I wrote a piece, I think it was two or three weeks ago, just kind of looking at their offense. And that was something that really stood out, is they were just getting crushed by these high leverage turnovers. I mean, just think of, you know, anecdotally, that game against the Titans and fourth down was the other thing. They're getting crushed with their fourth down chances. Remember that game, if they get a QB sneak there with Josh Allen at the end, all of a sudden they win that game and even the conversation's different. I mean, even with all that, they had what, the second highest point differential in the entire NFL going into these games. I still think they're a very good team. I'm not giving up on the Bills. I know they've got a tough game against the Bucs and they've still got the Patriots on the schedule. I think they're going to make some noise down the stretch. I think they're going to find some answers. They're still relatively healthy on offense, and I still think they're going to be heard from in the postseason.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up question, Shield, because like you said, they're at Tampa Bay on a short week coming up in week 14 here, the Patriots on their bye. According to the Upshot, if the Bills lose to the Buccaneers this Sunday, they have a 67% chance of making it to the postseason. 20% chance of winning the division. I think either less than 1% or 1% chance of finishing with the top seed in the AFC, but even their playoff participation is in question if they lose to the Bucs. So at that 67% rate, is that, you know, kind of what you would figure? Are you more optimistic on them than that number would indicate, or are you more pessimistic?
Yeah, I'm probably a little more optimistic. I think they'll win one of the at least one of the two games against Tampa or New England, and then I think they'll win the rest of their games. And so I think that will put them in position to make the playoffs. But I mean, what's interesting to me about the Bills is I think the team we see here down the stretch and in the playoffs is kind of going to have to be really different from the team we've seen through 13 weeks, because the Tre'Davious White injury, I mean, obviously that didn't get tested on Monday night, but you know, I know you're a big Tre'Davious White fan, as am I. Like, their defense is just not going to be as good down the stretch. And so the offense is going to be have to be a lot better. I mean, their defense has been what, top three in the NFL, maybe mm-hmm. even the best defense in the NFL so far. And that's just not going to be the case the rest of the way. The offense, as you mentioned, has been more middle of the pack, maybe slightly mm-hmm. above average. And that's probably going to have to be top five, top six, top seven, whatever, down the stretch for them to make some noise. So I think they'll win one of those two big games. I like them a little bit more than the 67% would indicate. I'm probably maybe somewhere in the high 70s or something like that. But I do think their team is going to have to take on a different identity, more of an identity of what we saw last year, where the offense is really the strength and maybe the defense is competent, but not kind of a defense that's just going to shut down opponents.
Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side, though, look at the Patriots now. I mean, they are 9-4. They have the best point differential, I believe, in all of football at plus 150. I feel like we're sort of sitting here thinking, okay, well, we're waiting for that game where Mac Jones is going to have to throw and they're going to struggle. We saw that happen earlier in the year against the Saints. We saw him have to throw and they were not very effective doing so. But I mean, this formula of playing great defense, forcing takeaways, running the football effectively, and getting Mac Jones to just kind of hold up his end of the bargain, that formula has led them to 7 straight wins, and most of those wins have been pretty comfortable. Over the rest of the year, after the bye, they're at Indy, they host Buffalo, they host Jacksonville, they're at Miami in week 18. I mean, is there any team that's going to give the Patriots trouble and force them out of this formula that sort of is coming up on the radar for you? Or is that going to be something where it's just, you know, they're going to have to get out to an early lead and then the Patriots are going to have to just catch up against the game situation?
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're really good. You know, nothing we've said has, you know, been about, hey, the Patriots aren't very good. Any statistical indicator, you can look at point differential, whatever. They've played some, even in their losses, they've been very competitive and they've blown a bunch of teams out. And so they are in the driver's seat, really, in the AFC. And if you get that first round bye and then you're playing at home, you know, we know that means you have a great shot of reaching the Super Bowl. What I'm curious about, you know, I guess it goes to kind of what you said, you know, is there an offense that, or is there a defense that can kind of play man coverage against the Patriots? And it's a game where the Patriots have to throw the ball to keep up and their weapons can beat man coverage, because, you know, I know that Kendrick Bourne has played well, but I still look at that group with Bourne and Aguilar and Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. And I say, all right, if you're facing a top tier defense that can play a lot of man and really make those throws difficult, are they going to be able to beat that? I mean, I think Mac Jones has been really, really good. I mean, his accuracy is unbelievable. You just don't see him miss throws. He's smart. You know, his processing is very quick, and so he's got a lot going for him. You know, that to me would be the concern. And you know, the teams you mentioned, I don't know, I guess maybe if that Miami game is interesting down the stretch, I guess that you know, that could kind of just be an interesting game in terms of, all right, is there a formula to make it tough on the Patriots? Are they, you know, that this is something that we could see teams in the playoffs accomplish?
Mm-hmm. Now, many people are saying that the Mac Jones of the NFC East is Gardner Minshew.
What a transition.
Sheil, I know you're someone who has covered the Eagles in the past. You are one of the co-hosts of the widely popular Birds with Friends podcast. You pay close attention to this football team, and you've been through the quarterback grinder. I mean, you have dealt with years of quarterback controversies, of back and forths, of shifting opinions when it comes to quarterbacks in Philadelphia. So I'm going to ask you about Minshew mania after one game where he beat the Jets and threw for 233 yards. So Sheil, in terms of what you saw from Gardner Minshew, in terms of the organizational reaction, in terms of the fan reaction, like, is there any realistic chance that after the bye, if Jalen Hurts is healthy over the remainder of the season, that we do see Gardner Minshew as the quarterback for this football team? And I guess the follow-up should be, should they consider using Gardner Minshew as their starting quarterback?
Yeah, I actually just watched the Eagles offensive film before this podcast. So it's all fresh in my mind right now. I don't think there's a chance he starts after the bye if Hurts is healthy. You know, I think there's a chance he would get an opportunity at some point down the stretch if Hurts struggles. But, you know, watching the film of that game, I mean, you mentioned it. You're facing the worst defense in the NFL, number one. Number two, that was like an outlier game for Minshew. I mean, I just looked at a thing looking at, you know, every start he's had in the NFL just by EPA per play. And this was far and away the best game of his career. So you're looking at that. And then you look at some of these throws. I mean, I thought he played fine. I thought he executed the offense. It was heavy on screens. There were a lot of checkdowns in there. I wrote down two plays that I thought he really did a good job on in terms of like avoiding pressure and making a play down the field. He absolutely gets credit for that. I actually thought his like accuracy and ball placement was pretty erratic. I mean, you look at a lot of these plays and there are guys wide open and he's either under throwing them or, throwing behind them and they're still making plays and catching those. And so it shows up in the box score, but you look at it, it's like, all right, you know, this isn't like a play that Jalen Hurts would not have made. And so they're so different. I think that's what, you know, is kind of what's most interesting about, if there's anything interesting about this quarterback, theoretical quarterback controversy, is that they're completely different players. I mean, Minshew, it's a lot of get the ball out on time. Don't be afraid to take the check down. You're not going to create a lot out of structure. And with Hurts, it's completely different. It's, hey, you're going to pick up yards with those scrambles. Those check downs, you know, are going to turn into Jalen Hurts runs. He's going to give you a lot in the run game. Neither one of them, I think, has an especially strong arm. And I think that shows up as kind of a trouble area for both those players. So like, if we're talking about just the rest of the season and you say, all right, who gives them a better chance to win games and make the playoffs? It's probably, you know, pretty close. I would say Hurts, just because I think they've built this offense on the run game and the offensive line. And I do think he's a pretty prolific runner. He's run for 695 yards and is a very efficient runner too. So I would say just go ahead and stick with that, because Hurts can come up with answers when it's not there in the passing game. If you want to make the case that there are certain weeks where you need a quick, efficient passing game, the ball's got to come out on time. You've got to string together methodical drives through the air. And if you want to tell me, hey, Minshew gives you a better chance of doing that, I wouldn't say you're crazy. So I think it's Hurts. I honestly don't think it probably makes that, it's that wild of a difference. It's a difference in terms of how they play, but not in the total outcome between the two.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this a little bit in my column today, and I feel like there's two things that would lead me to want to go to Hurts. One of them, I think, is the long-term picture for the Eagles, which we'll get to in a minute. The idea that, you know, they probably want to figure out if they want to get a quarterback with either one of their three first round picks this season, or maybe packaging them all to go get a veteran. Basically, they want to get more info on whether Jalen Hurts is their guy in 2022. But I think the broader reason why I think I would lean towards Jalen Hurts is that, leaving aside the Giants game where Jalen Hurts was bad and threw three interceptions and the offense was a mess, over those prior four games, he was one of the best quarterbacks in football, and the offense was running at a really high level. And so, you know, I sort of think the combination of like having the bad Giants game and then having the offense look effective against the Jets is sort of creating more of a controversy than there actually is. But I think if the Giants game hadn't happened and it's just been the Saints game, ankle injury, Minshew comes in, I feel like we'd be sitting here talking about, oh, wow, well, you know, the Eagles offense is really cooking because we saw Jalen Hurts play at a high level. We saw Gardner Minshew play at a high level. We don't have to worry about Jalen Hurts not being a useful quarterback. But I feel like, you know, when it comes to the NFL, whether it's fans or some media members or Twitter, like, people's memory is about 1 week long, maybe 3 days long. And I feel like Jalen Hurts is someone who's kind of being treated as like, oh, well, he's a struggling quarterback. And he was earlier this year, and he was against the Giants, but he was very good for a month there, you know, to the extent that I can't imagine the Eagles will be looking at him thinking, okay, we want to go back to another style of offense and bench him.
Yes, it's a great point. It's absolutely right. It's recency bias. I mean, think about it. Hurts has his the worst game of his season, and then Minshew has the best game of his career in back-to-back week. So it's like, all right, this would probably be a good time to zoom out and say, let's look at the big picture, the bigger body of work. And the Eagles offense has been, I would say, you know, mediocre to above average for most of the season by, you know, especially once they turn to kind of, all right, let's make Hurts a big part of the run game for most of the season. And so you absolutely have to look at that. And even if internally, you mentioned the long-term thing, like it doesn't have to be a high percentage of them thinking that Jalen Hurts is going to be the guy and we're going to have to build around him. Like even if that's 5%, if they think there's a 5% chance of that, yeah, wouldn't you still want to just get more information here in the final four or five games and just see what you're working with so that you can make a more informed decision after the season. You know, I don't think maybe I'm wrong. I don't know that anyone would argue that Minshew has any chance to be their long-term starter. And so if you look at it that way, it's like, all right, you know, what was this season really about? You know, I think they were pretty honest about it coming in that this season was going to be about kind of catching their breath as a franchise, accumulating assets so that they could be active in the 2022 offseason and making a little bit of an evaluation on Jalen Hurts. Well, you know, if it's close, and I think it is between Hurts and Minshew, you know, I still think Hurts gives them a better option. But even if you thought Minshew gave them a little bit of a better option, the long-term thing should even swing you more in Hurts's direction.
Have you seen the most recent set of DVOA rankings at footballoutsiders.com?
I think I have, but I think I took a quick look. Maybe I might have seen the tweet they put out with like the top 10. I don't know that I saw all of it.
So at 10, with an 8.2% overall team DVOA, is the Philadelphia Eagles. At 11, at 8.1%, so virtually identical, are the New England Patriots.
Wow.
The team we were just talking about as the best team in football. And I think that's sort of, you know, I sort of wonder, like getting to the idea that you said, like, this was supposed to be a year where they, you know, kind of just took a step backwards, healed up from the cap issues of the prior, you know, the Wentz era team, evaluated what they had with Hurts, built up assets, and then 2022 is going to be the year where they move forward. The idea that this year was supposed to be sort of a season where they, you know, we're not going to be competitive. We're not necessarily as concerned about being competitive as they would have been in years past during the Wentz era. I think that makes sense. But you look at their situation now, they're 6-7, which isn't necessarily a great record, but they have a 7.6 win Pythagorean expectation. So they've been better by point differential than their actual record. They are a league average. Sorry, where are they in DVOA? They are 15th, I believe, in DVOA, just ahead of teams like the Ravens in 16th, Washington, their competitors in 21st. And they get two games against Washington over the next month after this bye. A team that, even though they're built on paper to kind of stop the pass, they've been much better against the run this year than they have been against the pass. So I do think that Hurts makes sense to go back to, but like, do you think there's any sort of realistic leash where they would consider Minshew if Hurts struggled coming out of the week 14 bye here?
Yeah, I think he would have to have, like, you know, I don't know if it's back-to-back terrible games. I mean, if he comes out and plays terrible in their next game and they lose, then it's obviously going to be a conversation. And if they're still in the playoff mix at that point, the conversation is going to intensify. If he has back-to-back terrible games, then they're probably not going to be in playoff contention. So then if that's the case, I don't even know what the point would be. But, you know, it's just, if you look at the game against the Jets, you know, I actually thought their coaching staff did a good job of scheming things up. And it was, you know, a combination of that and the Jets having a terrible defense. Like, there weren't really a lot of plays in that game where I would say, all right, Minshew can make this play and Hurts can't make this play. And so, you know, for that reason, I also think Hurts has built up a lot of goodwill with his teammates, with the way he's kind of carried himself. He's not been kind of a me guy. I think the teammates have really kind of taken to him going as far back as training camp. And so to me, it's probably not going to be the case, you know, regardless of whether there are calls for Minshew to play or not. I think probably the most likely scenario and probably a pretty high percentage is that Hurts is going to finish out the season as long as he's healthy.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they can be a playoff team with Hurts as their quarterback over the last month of the year?
I think they can be. I wouldn't predict it. I don't think it's the most likely scenario. I would say the most likely scenario to me is probably that they kind of split the last four games. Maybe they lose one of the Washington games. They finish the season against the Cowboys. Maybe they lose that game and then they beat Washington and the Giants. I mean, it's possible that they go on a mini run or win some close games and go 3-1 down the stretch, maybe go 9-8 and make the playoffs. I don't think that is the most likely outcome, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's about 30% now, around or 28% per the Upshot. If they are heading into these final four games of the year, obviously, if they can sweep Washington, that increases dramatically, about 75%, but that's easier said than done. I mean, their schedule looked very easy on paper, and then they lost to the Giants in a game where they were just wildly frustrating. So anything feels like it's on the table for the Eagles with four games to go. But like you said, I mean, this is a team that was really building for 2022 and beyond. And it doesn't look maybe quite as good as it looked earlier in the season when the Dolphins were an absolute mess. But I think a lot of teams out there would be very jealous of what the Eagles have to work with heading into the 2022 draft. They are likely going to have three first-round picks, one from the trade down with Miami, and one from the Carson Wentz deal. Assuming Carson Wentz plays, I think it's, what, 75% of the snaps in Indy, which is extremely likely to happen, given that he's played basically every snap so far for the Colts. So in terms of how this team is positioned for the next few years, I mean, in terms of where they are now versus where they can be, given the young talent they have, given the assets they have to sort of acquire players over the next couple of years, are there other situations you would look at as more desirable in terms of teams that are likely to improve? Or do the Eagles say that as maybe the team that has the most in terms of what to build around over the next few years at the moment?
Yeah, I think if you compare them, you know, there are obviously a few teams with the draft capital, the Jets being one of them, the Giants being one of them, and then the Eagles. So the resources are there for a, you know, for a nice kind of rebuild or whatever you want to call it. The big question is quarterback and what they're going to do there. Is there someone in this draft that catches their eye and they say, hey, we have three first round picks. Let's go ahead and draft them and build around this guy. You know, there's the option of trading for a veteran quarterback. Certainly they have the draft capital to do that, but I don't know. I kind of look at this roster and I don't know that it's good enough that I would feel great about trading for somebody or trying to trade for somebody like Russell Wilson and thinking that you're going to be in the Super Bowl mix. Right away, you know, maybe 4 or 5 weeks from now, some young players will really play well down the stretch and my opinion will change on that. But that's kind of where I am now. Or maybe you say, you know, I kind of think the most likely scenario might be that maybe they do a little trade back in the first round. They accumulate draft capital for 2023. They go into next season again with Jalen Hurts and Gardner Minshew. And they say, let's add some young talent. Let's make this a better overall roster. Let's continue to have some optionality at the quarterback position going into the following draft or the following offseason if veterans become available. And that's kind of when we'll make our biggest move. So it's so hard to know because, you know, the draft evaluations, we'll see what the months ahead bring. I know right now a lot of people who know this stuff are not high on this quarterback class, but we've seen before it just, you know, all it takes is falling in love with one of these guys and it can totally change your opinion. So maybe that happens, but that's kind of how I look at sort of the resources they have and what they might do here this offseason.
And there are other teams in this vein, like you said, the Jets have Another first-round pick coming from the Seahawks as a result of the Jamal Adams deal. The Giants have a first-round pick coming from the Bears as part of the Justin Fields deal. The Dolphins have a first-rounder from San Francisco coming this year, and then two in 2023, if I'm not mistaken, one from the Niners and their own. The Lions have two first-rounders coming from the Matthew Stafford deal. I mean, in that sort of core of teams where it's, hey, you know, part of what makes them intriguing are the draft assets, do you think the Eagles are best positioned from that group, or is there another team you would kind of, you'd rather have their roster and their assets than what the Eagles have to offer right now?
Yeah, there's so many variables, because I was going through this exercise before the podcast. And I'm looking at the Jets going, wow, they have picks 4 and 5 right now. Mm-hmm. They've got 4 in the top 40. But as I said, I just watched the Jets film from this week. And like, I mean, it's just a disaster, their roster in many ways. I mean, I know they've got obviously a handful of guys who can play, but they need help in so many areas. And theirs is probably the least intriguing to me, because, you know, you're probably going to stick with, you're going to stick with Zach Wilson. And I just don't know if he's going to be good or not. I mean, maybe he will be, but there's so much riding on that. So yeah, I don't know that I would love to be in that situation. The Giants, they, you know, I think right now, if you look at it, they would have picks 6, 7, and 38. Mm-hmm. And so that one you could kind of, you know, make the case for is in the same ballpark as the Eagles, but is Joe Judge still going to be the head coach there? Who's going to be making the draft picks? They're, you know, offensive line is obviously a disaster. I kind of think the Giants are sort of an intriguing team in terms of how they use that draft capital. I mean, would they look at it as and say, hey, we should take a big swing on one of these veteran quarterbacks. Our defense can be okay. Maybe we can use the rest of our draft picks on some offensive line help. We're already set at wide receiver with the skill positions. But, you know, I think overall, I probably would probably put the Eagles at the top of that pecking order. But, you know, depending on how you feel about who's making the decisions in the other spots, I think you could certainly make a case for them.
Yeah. I mean, the Giants, that'd be intriguing. I mean, there's more short-term investments, I feel like, with the Giants. Like, they've gone out and traded for someone like Leonard Williams. They have some big contracts on the defensive side of the ball. I could see them talking themselves into saying, hey, we are that one quarterback away. And if we get, you know, Russell Wilson, then our wide receivers are going to look better. The offensive line's not going to have to be quite as good as maybe they have to be with Daniel Jones. They're good, I think, but certainly it's easier to block for Russell Wilson, I think, even given his ability to scramble, than it is for Daniel Jones. I could see them making that case. And they're also much further removed from success than the Eagles are. You know, like, the Eagles are only a few years removed from a Super Bowl. The Giants, a decade now, and have not been back to the postseason. So actually, they went back to the postseason once and lost in the first round. So not even, haven't won a single playoff game since that Super Bowl win a decade ago. So I think it depends on maybe who they hire. Like, with the Eagles, it seems like Sirianni and Roseman are coming back for another season. The Giants, it could be a totally different management group.
Right.
But I do think that, you know, it's going to be really fascinating. And I think some of it's going to depend on who's actually available. Like, we figure Aaron Rodgers is going to be available. We figure Russell Wilson might be available. We figure Deshaun Watson, if the sexual assault allegations are resolved, might be available. But it does seem like, you know, there's so many different ways it could go, which is fun for us as people who have to produce content about the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering about Russell Wilson. If they keep Joe Judge and they say, all right, Russell, you're going to New York. Yeah, they've had offensive line issues. Yeah, they've got, you know, maybe one of the most conservative coaches in the NFL. How do you feel about the change of scenery? That would really be something for his career. But yeah, those quarterbacks are going to be the story of the offseason. I mean, I was even like, you know, as you had me kind of look at this, I was workshopping. I was like, is there a Russell Wilson to Cleveland trade that could potentially makes sense, where all of a sudden now he's got one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. He's got a smart offensive coach. Maybe the, mm-hmm. the Seahawks get Baker and some draft capital in return. Is that something that could be intriguing to them? So, yeah, I don't know. I'm at the point like in my life where I almost like the offseason stuff. I think I do like the offseason stuff more than the in-season stuff. I like watching the games, but once we get into like, you know, February, March, and you're just going through every team's roster and you're looking at which key players are going to be traded and how teams are going to use their resources. I feel like that part of covering the NFL has become more interesting to me than the actual games, which I don't know. That might say something about me more than anything else, but it is how I feel.
Phil Capadia says, cancel the games, play them on paper.
Shorten the season. Yeah. I don't need 18. Ready. Yeah, maybe eight games. That'd be good with me. Then let's get to what teams are going to do in free agency.
Six games a year and play them all in 45 mile an hour winds. The Shiel Kapadia philosophy. Well, Shiel, people want to see your excellent coverage of the NFL and the Eagles, of course, as well. Where can they do that?
Yep, you can read me on The Athletic in the NFL section. That's where you will find me if you want Eagles coverage. We've got our podcast with me, Bo Wolf, and Zach Berman, Birds with Friends. You can subscribe to that anywhere you want. I think that's most of my plugs here.
You also are someone who appears on The Athletic Football Show.
I do. Yes, we do a fun pick segment that usually turns out to be a disaster and maybe gets me. I have to dress up as Bill Belichick or I have to drink a Dan Campbell coffee order. So I do that with Robert Mays and Nate Tice. We do that every Thursday evening. It comes out Friday morning and it's a lot of fun. If for nothing else, you just want to hear me like as a totally, beat down version of what you heard on this podcast. That's where you can hear me, that version of me.
I would have got an angry text if I hadn't forced you to plug The Athletic Football Show. But Shiel, you know, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for hopping on today.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much, as always, to my friend Shiel Kapadia. Shiel does awesome work at The Athletic. Check him out there. Check out Birds with Friends. Check out his appearances on The Athletic Football Show. Strong recommendation from me, myself. We'll be back next week. More football audio on the way. Hope you guys enjoyed the week 13 action. I get the weeks kind of confused at this point. Hope your guys' fantasy teams are doing well. Hope you're ready for the postseason to come. And we'll have more audio next week. Thanks so much for listening.